So if we take the creation story of Ganesha, it starts with Parvati realizing that she doesn't trust Shiva's guards to actually guard her inner sanctuary. And so she realizes that she has to create her own son. And he will be a being that she can trust. So it starts with the feminine realizing it can't be dependent, right? It starts with the feminine realizing that it needs a certain kind of autonomy that will safeguard and protect it. And so it begins with the awakening feminine. It begins with that inner impulse to rise up and be fully present within ourselves without fear. And so she creates her son out of her own body, and she gives him the magic sword, which as long as he holds it, he's invincible. And she sets him to guard her bathing chamber. And he's a beautiful little boy, and he's out there with his sword, and he's protecting his mom. And then Shiva, who's been out doing whatever Shiva does, comes back, and he wants immediate entree into his consort's inner sanctuary. And the boy says, no, you can't go in. No one's allowed to go in. And Shiva flies into a rage. And they battle a bit, and as long as the boy is holding the sword, he can fend off Shiva. But at a certain point, Shiva knocks the sword out of his hand, and then he's able to cut his head off. And he goes storming into Parvati, you know, what's going on? Who is this? And so in this mode, Shiva really embodies what we call around here the patriarchal masculine. And it's an incredibly dissociative state that's incredibly fear-based and absolutely needing to dominate and control everything that it gets in contact with. And again, if you put the story inside yourself, in this moment, Shiva represents our own wounded masculine, right? It's that aspect that exists to tyrannize us and not respect our boundaries. Not respect the boundaries of our innocence, not respect the boundaries of our wisdom, not respect the boundaries of our innate being. All the voices that make us wrong and put us down and judge us and compare us and create all kinds of narratives about what we should be doing, what we are doing, what we're not doing, you know. The so-called inner critic, the inner demons, whatever we want to call them. And in this moment in the story, this is really what Shiva embodies. It's the brutalizing. It's that brutalizing masculine, which we experience as inner voices, a cruel, cruel, judging, harsh, questioning, challenging, doubting voices, and not questioning us in a search for deeper truth, questioning us to invalidate us and make us feel even worse about ourselves than we might. And in that moment, in the story, this is what Shiva embodies. And it's again, it's a very dissociated state. It's a very out of balance state. In the language of masculine and feminine, it's an extremely patriarchal state. And the patriarchal masculine is no good to anyone or anything, because all it does is dominate, control, and desecrate. That's all it knows how to do. Because it's cut off from its source, which is the deep feminine. So he goes storming in, and here she is in her bath, and yelling and screaming and whatever, raging about who is it? And when she realizes what has happened, that he has actually killed her beautiful son that she just created out of her own body to protect her. And you know, there in the epithets of Ganesha, gatekeeper of the sacred feminine, that's where Ganesha gets that role, the gatekeeper of our deep inner being. And Shiva has completely betrayed that role and completely betrayed the sacred acting power of a sacred masculine that exists to work in concert with the deep feminine, with the deep being. So she becomes really angry, but not in the reactive rage of Shiva, in that deep truth rage of Kali, the rage that protects innocence, the rage that protects truth, that mother bear, righteous, connected rage that says, how dare you murder my son and come storming in here? How dare you? And this is the way we need to talk to these voices inside of ourselves, right? How dare you challenge me in this way? How dare you try to convince me that there's something wrong with me as I am? How dare you invade the sanctuary of my own heart? Unfortunately, because they are both deity fields, Shiva gets it. And he withdraws back into himself and experiences terrible remorse. And I think I didn't say at the beginning that why I want to even talk about this tonight is because I've been writing about the story, and so thinking a lot about the story. And as those of you who've been around for a long time know, that for quite a while now I've had the sense that Ganesha is very much a model or archetype of what I think of as the new human. It's really the next step in our evolution. And that even the evolutionary process has definite steps that we all need to take inside ourselves. And the first step is that awakening of the feminine. Because in all of us, we're so wounded in patriarchy, we're so wounded in the system that for so many thousands of years has put thinking over feeling, has put mind over body, has put doing over being. And so the first step in our evolution is that awakening of the power of being, and that realization that being is the core, and that not only is being entitled to claim every space that it reaches into, it is essential that being reaches into every space inside of ourselves. And in the mystery, the mysterious ways of our transformational process, when being rises up and takes its rightful place inside of us, that patriarchal masculine immediately comes into balance. And that's exactly what happens in the story. When Shiva first comes in, he's like up here raging, and she's down here. She's literally in her bath. He's raging over her, and she rises up, and balance is restored. And what allows Shiva to come back into himself and meet Devi, meet the goddess, is the complete inner experience of remorse. And it's so interesting to me that this story, that's such an old story, at a very deep intuitive level understands everything about transformation right here, right now in the 21st century. It's quite amazing. It's a very old story, The story, this particular version, which is the most popular version, dates back probably to the 12th century. So it's that process of deep feeling and feeling everything. Not just feeling happy, but feeling the depth of remorse, really feeling the grief and the remorse for this wrong action. You know, and so often we dissociate, you know, anything that we do, like cutting the head off of someone who actually meant us no harm, is an opportunity to, not to mention cutting the head off something inside of ourselves that's actually precious and beautiful. Every time we become aware of this, it's an opportunity to feel some remorse. But how often do we have shame about that, which makes us push away from it, not allow ourselves to feel the depth of our fallibility? And so in the story, Shiva's really giving us a lesson about don't be afraid to get so down and dirty with yourself, and that's required. And in order for Ganesh to be created, it's essential that deep, profound, dark, uncomfortable feeling is felt. And Shiva goes wandering around looking for a head, and finally he meets the old elephant, who takes one look at Shiva and says, you know, dude, what's the matter? And Shiva explains, I flew into a rage, I cut my son's head off, I killed him. I need a new head to restore him to life. No one will give me a head. And the elephant says, I will, take mine. And he offers his head, and you know, and that's another element of the evolutionary process for all of us. There has to be an element of sacrifice. We have to be willing to offer this head. We have to be willing to offer ourselves, fully offer ourselves into the fires of life. However, we may not be in the mood to do that. For true transformation to happen inside of us, there has to be that arising of being, that arising of the deep feminine. There has to be the willingness to experience the depths within us, no matter how dark and deep and scary they may go. And there has to be the willingness to make the sacrifice. And out of those three, Ganesha, as a model of the new being, can be born. And the beauty of the iconography of Ganesha, the elephant head, really represents instinctual nature. It's not the thinking mind superior to the body that's underneath it. It's a completely unified presence of instinctual, intuitive presence sitting atop the human body. With that trunk that touches the ground, it's very connected to the earth. There's no real transcendence here. It's all about deepening inside of oneself. It's all about immanence. It's all about connection. It's all about the honoring of the deep intuitive presence, so that the thinking mind serves that and not the other way around. That's where we need to go. That's the journey we need to make if we want real transformation. And it's interesting, when I think of Ganesha, and when I started thinking of Ganesha as the new being, the new human, this was about probably 15, 16, 17 years ago. And it's amazing to me now when I look at what's happening in terms of the newer generations of human beings coming up, and all the gender bending that's going on right now, and all the transitioning from one gender to another, and all, you know, all of the boundaries that we have lived with for so many thousands of years are dissolving. And gender is becoming less and less relevant. And in Ganesha is a rather genderless being. It's amazing to me again that in the Hindu imagination that created so much iconography of very masculine looking gods and very feminine looking goddesses. And here's Ganesha, round, pot-bellied, elephant head, very asexual, and very, you know, the roundness of the feminine, the strength of the masculine, very gender-bending kind of being. And the final thing about Ganesha that's so interesting and relates back to Kaga, Om Kagaya Namaha, that light that moves through the sky like a bird. Ganesha, this, you know, heavy thing. I mean, it's a big male body with a big yellow banana on top. Its mount is a mouse. You know, we talked about this years ago. And in order to ride the mouse, no matter how big Ganesha may be, he's actually pure light. Because in order to ride the mouse, that requires an incredible lightness. Otherwise, it'll crush the mouse. So this being that gives the illusion of being rather big is very much like that Kaga, that moving, that light, that aspect of light that moves through the sky like a bird. And we really want to cultivate that light inside of us. We want that light, that lightness of being inside of us. And that lightness of being comes as we move through these evolutionary transformations inside of ourselves. And every time we move around another ring in the spiral of our own evolutionary process, we're becoming lighter and lighter. We're becoming that sense of moving through the sky as light, like a bird. And that's very much embodied in this archetypal energy field that's been personified as Lord Ganesha. It's very, very, very connected. So kind of take all that in. Just let it percolate inside of you.